Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's special San Francisco election series. Every Wednesday through the day after Election Day on June 5th, we'll air a special Your Call focusing on the mayoral race, propositions, and ranked choice voting. Early voting has begun. Be sure to get out there and vote. And you can vote for at least two candidates. If your top choice does not get 50%, your second choice might win. Today, we are joined by San Francisco Board of Supervisors President and mayoral candidate London Breed. Supervisor Breed was first elected as District 5 Supervisor in November 2012. In January 2015, she was elected President of the Board. She was re-elected as District 5 Supervisor in November 2016 and re-elected as board president 2 months later. Her district includes the Fillmore Western Addition, Lower Haight, Alamo Square, Coal Valley, and the Inner Sunset. When former Mayor Ed Lee suddenly passed away in December, Supervisor Breed served as acting mayor. Before her election, she served as executive director of the African American Art and Cultural Complex. She also served as a San Francisco Redevelopment Agency commissioner for 5 years. And in 2010, she was appointed by then Mayor Gavin Newsom to be a fire commissioner. Supervisor Breed has been endorsed by many officials and organizations, including U.S. Senator Kamala Harris, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, San Francisco Firefighters Local 798, Unite Here Local 2, and the San Francisco Chronicle. Supervisor Breed was born and raised in San Francisco in the Fillmore Western Addition neighborhood, and she joins me in studio. Hi, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. There's so much to talk about. You were born and raised here. I've lived here since 95. I'm a California native. And it's amazing to see the changes in this city, as you know. We've got massive inequality. I just read that San Francisco now has the third most billionaires of any city in the world. The average home is about $1 million. A one bedroom in my neighborhood is renting for $4,000. Major homeless encampments. When you look at all these changes, how do you explain how we got to this point?
It's really difficult to explain. I think part of the challenge is, as someone who grew up here, I grew up actually in public housing. I lived there over 20 years of my life. I spent a lot of my time working in the community trying to address issues around violence, because we were not only losing my friends to gun violence, but we were losing their kids when I started working in the community after college. And so a lot of my focus has been on working directly in the community and also trying to push as a redevelopment agency commissioner to build more housing and to make sure that there's a real connection between people who are a part of San Francisco and their opportunity to actually access the housing in our city. It's why I fought so hard for neighborhood preference legislation that we passed on the Board of Supervisors, giving 40% preference for people who live in that particular neighborhood. So most of my career has been trying to fight to connect the dots. And how we got here, it's a sad state of affairs. I mean, but I do know that between 2010 and 2015, for every 8 jobs we created, when we focused on jobs, we only created 1 unit of housing. We started to build. We have all these different new developments happening all over our city. But a lot of the folks, I think, who are homeless in many ways here in our streets probably were, it was easier to hide. And now everyone's kind of being pushed from one place to the next place to the next place. And now you're starting to see it more. Mm-hmm. And what we have to do as a city is propose new, bold ideas to address some of these challenges.
Well, and a lot of people say that some of the reason why we got here is because of some of the policies that have been implemented, for example, under the Lee administration. So to see such massive inequality and people suffering in a city with so much wealth, I mean, you know, Angela Alioto, when we had her on, she said it was tech. Jane Kim said it's because HUD has been totally gutted. I mean, what are your thoughts about just how we got to this place?
And I will just say that I don't think it's fair to point the finger at one particular individual. I mean, all of the candidates who are running pretty much served in some capacity a lot longer than I have.
Right.
We all have to take responsibility for the role that we might have played in the challenges that exist. I mean, yes, of course, for the great things we stand up and we try and talk about great things that we've been able to do. Like, for example, I'm really proud that I got Mayor Lee to give the San Francisco Housing Authority $2 million, and we placed 179 formerly homeless families into permanent affordable housing. So I'm proud of those things, but I do think that we have to make better decisions. We can't continue to let bureaucracy run its course and be reactionary to these problems. We have got to be proactive in dealing with those. For example, building more housing, making sure that we cut the time to build housing in San Francisco in half. We passed inclusionary housing laws so that middle-income residents can finally qualify for affordable housing. You know how it is, especially with teachers and other folks who we talk about building affordable housing for. They make a little bit too much to qualify for affordable housing, but not enough to afford market rate in San Francisco. I pushed to change those inclusionary housing laws, and they passed at the board unanimously. So a family of four, say, for example, making $130,000 a year, that's two teachers potentially, they could actually qualify. But we got to build it. We got to build more, and we got to connect those people that we know need housing to those opportunities. And my neighborhood preference legislation is also a tool for that purpose.
So you brought up a lot of points there, and not to point fingers, but I did ask Supervisor Kim, because she did vote for the Twitter tax cut, which always gets a lot of attention, right? I mean, talk a little bit about what you will do. What is your relationship going to be like with some of these big businesses? Because here's what happens. These companies go public, and they create millionaires overnight. People making $200,000-$300,000 cannot compete with that. This is just the reality
yes.
that we have here in San Francisco. And the big criticism over that is that there is no quid pro quo, right? The city gave these companies tax cuts. We didn't really get much in return. So what is your relationship going to be like? The Salesforce building, I think they lit it last night or something. But there's a lot of new employees coming, a lot of money coming. So what's your relationship going to be like?
So my relationship is going to be such, of course, I want to make sure that I hold all companies accountable to pay their fair share. It's why I put Proposition D on the ballot. It's an increase in commercial real estate tax, not retail, commercial real estate, for the purposes of, you know, generating $1 billion that could help pay for housing in San Francisco for formerly homeless, for low, for moderate income residents. I also want to make sure that we are basically tapping into that and developing partnerships and getting those companies to do a couple of things. Help pay for housing. The job growth that they are producing is amazing, but it needs to be, number one, tied to helping us build more housing. And number two, making sure the people who live in San Francisco are tapped into, that there's a connection between those jobs and people who are already residents of San Francisco. I want to make sure these companies have paid internships for our high school students. If it weren't for the mayor's youth employment and training program, I don't know where I'd be. I have a brother, sadly, who is incarcerated. Think about the difference in opportunity, a door that's open to something that's right in the backyard of most of these kids who are left out or forgotten.
Yeah.
Making sure these companies are not just pouring money into the schools, which is also important, but they're bringing these kids into this field and preparing the next generation of young people in this city for those exact opportunities so that they're not seeking talent outside of our city when we have talent right here.
Can you be specific when you say that these companies should contribute? What do you mean by that?
So they should contribute, of course, making contributions to our schools to help, you know, with supporting our teacher salary increases. There's a proposition on the ballot right now, Proposition G, that could help, a parcel tax that could help in that regard. But they should be contributing, you know, dollars through the foundations that many of them have or foundations that exist that support these particular programs. They should also pay for these internships for a high school student, a program that I plan to develop as mayor for the purposes of making it easy for them to accept students and hopefully working with the school district to get them to commit to giving kids school credit for those purposes. So developing those programs. And also when we talk about housing development, they have got to help us in this housing production. They can't just, for example, there's a Salesforce tower and that's great, but we're talking about hundreds of thousands of employees, and where are they all going to live in San Francisco?
They have not all arrived yet.
And that's where we need to make sure that there is a direct link. The Central SoMa plan, where we're talking about, I think, close to, you know, somewhere around 30,000-40,000 job opportunities, but about 7,000 units. That's an imbalance. And I think San Francisco has got to develop long-term strategic plans that tie our growth in terms of jobs, opportunities, and housing together. Right now, our unemployment rate is about 2.1%, one of the lowest anywhere. And this is why we continue to struggle with housing. This is why there is such an inequity. It has everything to do with making sure that people who fit in the middle, who aren't necessarily a part of these industries, making sure that they could afford to live here. I mean, think about it. The teachers, the restaurant workers, the cooks, the janitors, the people who I've been here all my life. I remember there was a lot of diversity in our city, and now there's, you know, limited economic diversity. We have a limited middle class, and I think part of what we have to do as a city is just make sure that there's opportunity for everyone, so that when we have this influx of growth and development around jobs specifically, there is housing to account for it as well.
You have several platforms on your website: transportation, education, homelessness, safety, affordable housing, and all of these plans and programs cost money. So you've got some people say that if we have some of the largest corporations in the world in our backyard, they need to be taxed higher, that the ultra wealthy need to be taxed. And then you have other people saying we've got a $10 billion budget, which does include the ports and SFO, but the waste needs to be dealt with. Priorities need to be shifted. Where do you see it?
I think the waste needs to be dealt with and definitely priority shifted. But I also think that we need to leverage the wealth of these companies for the purposes of helping us to pay for these things. It could either be a tax, it could be fees, it could actually be contributions. In fact, there was conversations around ending family homelessness and $30 million that has already been raised for those purposes. And I do think that there's an opportunity to do all of those things. And that's what I'm proposing to do as mayor. I'm not proposing to raise, you know, any income taxes on anyone. I'm not proposing to raise anybody's property taxes specifically for people's homes, which drives up the cost of housing. I'm proposing to tax commercial real estate. I'm proposing to get a lot of these companies to contribute to San Francisco and the programs that we have available. For example, when we try to build housing, we purchased the McDonald's site on Hayton Stanion. It was a, you know, underutilized parking lot, and McDonald's was really a challenging area on Hayton Stanion, that particular property. I want to make sure we're building housing for low, moderate, and middle-income residents. And how we do that, we need the money for the middle part and the moderate part, because we can't get federal tax credits for really we can only get it for really low-income housing.
Well, the way that I see it right now that's happening is there's so much philanthropy, charity, but that allows the company to spend it where they think it should be spent rather than the community or the government, right? And so what are your thoughts about that? Because a lot of people say, yes, it's nice that you're doing charity, but let's tax you so we can decide how this money is spent.
Yeah.
Rather than you, Mr. B, you know, putting your name on the hospital or the school or whatever it is, that the community should be making these decisions.
And that's fine. And I agree. And that's both. That's why I put Proposition D on the ballot. It's a commercial real estate tax for the purposes of generating $1 billion to provide support so that we can build more housing in San Francisco. So I think we have to do all of those things. I think that all of that contributes to helping us address these solutions, and we have to just make sure we make the right decisions about how this money is spent.
Today on our special Your Call, we are joined by San Francisco Board of Supervisors President and mayoral candidate London Breed. And you can find her platform at yourcallradio.org. Election Day is on June 5th. Early voting has begun. You can go to City Hall anytime, 8 to 5 and vote right now. And then right before the election, it'll be open on the weekends. And if you have any questions or comments for Supervisor Breed, President Breed, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. A lot of people are very disenchanted with the process. I mean, I brought in all the mailers I'm getting. I'm just inundated. And we've got, for a June 5th election, a lot of things to vote on. And a lot of people are angry because there's so much. What are your thoughts about, for example, Prop D versus actually legislating on an issue like that?
So Prop D is not something that we could legislate at the Board of Supervisors because it is a tax. You have to take taxes to the voters. And so we are doing just that. And again, we're talking about generating $1 billion for housing in San Francisco to help address what we know is a serious problem, especially for people who are homeless. And in some cases, they need supportive housing. So it's not though as if sometimes you can place people in housing and expect them to thrive and be okay. Sometimes they need a little bit more assistance with support, and that is quite costly.
Right. It's very costly.
Yes.
I want to ask.
But it's less costly than having people, end up in our hospital beds or end up in other situations. It's more costly to have to manage people on the streets and deal with a public health crisis or anything else of that nature than it is to house people and to try and keep them housed.
Where do you stand right now? Interim Mayor Mark Farrell is conducting sweeps south of Market. Where do you stand on sweeps? Do you plan to do that?
So I don't agree with his method. Sweeping people and saying, get out of here, is just going to move them from one place to the next. That's not the right way to do things. What I'm proposing, when I become mayor, is I will identify a location on property. I will set up restrooms. I will set up places for people to shower. And we will bring all of the 10 encampments to one specific location, and we will have discussions with people on a person-by-person basis to find out what their issue is. How can we help them? I mean, we were doing this when I served as acting mayor. We were out there. We cleared out the showplace encampment. And part of that wasn't just, okay, we're going to come out and sweep everything and tell you to leave. It's like the people, the medical professional for Department of Public Health and all these folks that were out there, they knew the people by name. They were out there every day trying to understand what the challenges were and would they agree to accept maybe a bed in one of our navigation centers or in our respite center or some of the other places that we might have available. People are saying, well, there are no beds. There are no beds. That's not entirely accurate. We were able to get a number of people placed. And no, we couldn't get them all placed because some people just refuse, but the majority of those folks agreed. And I think it's a process, and we can't let up and just throw our hands up and not address this issue. Having tents on our streets is not a humane way to live. So let's try to get out there, understand what the issues are. And also, I will have a no tolerance policy as it relates to having tents on the streets. But we will have to provide people with an alternative if we want that to effectively work. And that's what I plan to do.
What is that going to look like, a no tolerance policy?
Well, basically, if there's a tent encampment, we are going to have a place like basically you we're going to clear out this tent encampment. You'll have a number of time. We're going to work with you. But this is where you can go temporarily until we can work with you. We will bring your stuff. We will bring you if we want you to agree to that. If not, within this certain period of time, we're going to clear out this tent encampment. So that's what it's going to be. It's more of a compassionate approach to addressing this issue.
Going back to housing, obviously we need more affordable housing. How do you plan to deal with things like sea level rise? We did a show with UC Berkeley professor Roland Bergman, and he said that by the end of the century, Treasure Island and parts of SFO could be totally underwater. I mean, we're already seeing things sinking at this point. So if we build, I mean, the Mission Bay area, so much development over there, and that the sea level rise is already happening. So how do you plan to deal with that? I mean, he basically
said politicians
need to be forward thinking rather than just say, we're going to build today.
And I'm so glad you asked that, because as president of the Board of Supervisors, I actually sit on the Capital Planning Committee, and we have a bond that's going to be on the November ballot. It will not raise property taxes. It will provide an opportunity to generate over $400 million to help reinforce the seawall and do what we need to do necessary in order to protect, you know, our city, to protect the seawall just in general, because it does need a lot of work. It needs a lot of repair. We have a long-term strategic plan of action to address that issue. And what I've said to people when we did the press conference announcing this is, we only have to look at, you know, some of the natural disasters and some of the other things like Hurricane Katrina to know that we have to do better with our infrastructure. And oftentimes, it's the things that we don't see that make San Francisco work better. We can't just build more housing. We can't just improve Muni and not think about the seawall and our infrastructure and the water auxiliary system that's in the west side of town and how all of those things actually come together to make San Francisco work. And that is an important part of what we need to do. As a member of the Capital Planning Committee, we have a plan for how we add these particular things on our bonds, how we bring them to voters without increasing. We have a longstanding policy of not increasing policy, increasing property tax as we move these particular bonds forward for the purposes of dealing with the important infrastructure of our city. That is at, you know, that is definitely on my radar and has to be an important part of how any mayor runs San Francisco.
Today, we're joined by San Francisco Board of Supervisors President and mayoral candidate London Breed. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. I want to ask you about taxi drivers. I'm sure you've heard about this. I hope you have. It deserves so much more attention. At least four hired drivers in New York City have committed suicide, and they blame Uber and Lyft because they just couldn't make ends meet. And I've interviewed a lot of cab drivers here in San Francisco who said, my pay has been cut in half. I cannot afford to send my daughter to college anymore. I know that Uber and Lyft are regulated by the California PUC, but why didn't government officials do more to ensure that this would not be happening right now to taxi drivers?
I don't have the answer to, you know, what has happened in the past, but I could tell you, first of all, we're going to have a hearing at the Board of Supervisors to talk specifically about, you know, the taxi industry and what's happening with all of these platforms. I do think that, unfortunately, as technology has increased significantly, that government has not kept up with the pace of all of these changes and how they impact our city. It's not just, you know, you think about the challenges with taxi cab drivers, but also with congestion as it relates to people getting around our city, just in general. And it's not just the Ubers and Lyfts. It's the Caviar, it's the Postmates, it's all these new services where it's like, you know, people are looking for these services and they want these services. And I think just like with the taxi industry, there should be some limitations. And we need the state officials to work with us on trying to impose the appropriate regulations to deal with this industry so that it's fair and it's balanced. And so I'm definitely committed to just working with our state officials in order to push the envelope, in order to make sure that there is some accountability, that we look at limits like we've done with taxi cabs, with these particular industries for the purposes of addressing congestion, and we hold them accountable to pay for our infrastructure here in San Francisco, where the roads are all messed up.
Completely messed up. And according to the city attorney, Dennis Herrera, there are about 45,000 Uber and Lyft drivers on San Francisco's roads. We've had those drivers on who say that they, too, are having a hard time making ends meet, making about 10 to 11 bucks an hour. They drive in from all areas of the state, which contributes to climate change. So when you say that there should be regulations or caps, I mean, you're going to have a major platform if you win. What would you call for specifically on this issue?
So first of all, Lyft is actually sharing data with the city. And part of what I would want to do is to be able to obtain the data to understand exactly how many of these vehicles are in our city at any given time. And then also look at developing a long-term plan to reduce the number of these particular vehicles in our city. I think that's what's going to be important based on what the data is going to show us, and also limitations on making sure that We have a priority or something for San Francisco residents. That's something that we need to look at as well, so that San Francisco residents, you know, who live here, and many of them are struggling to make ends meet, that they have some priority here as it relates to the ability to be a part of this particular industry if there are limits imposed. So this is not a one thing that's going to fix this issue. Because when you think about it, for example, if there is a tax, which there most likely probably will be or should be, it may go to the voters. I mean, it would have to go to the voters. Then that's going to be passed on to the consumers. And we want to make sure that that doesn't interfere with the pay of a lot of the low wage earners in this particular industry. It's about striking a balance. It's about developing a long-term plan of action and making the right decisions in order to address this issue, which will hopefully deal with issues of congestion as well.
And the other issue is so many people are now independent contractors, and they don't have any benefits. They have no retirement. I mean, this is just exploding. What do you plan to do about that? Are you planning to do anything about that? Where do you stand on that issue?
On which issue?
Independent contractors.
Yeah, and I think there are some people, because I used to run a nonprofit, and, you know, a lot of the folks that worked in the center, I hired a lot of employees, and I provided my employees with benefits, but there were some people who were independent contractors who were just working during the summer to teach a class or to do other things where this wasn't their full-time job. And so I think it just really depends, because sometimes when people are independent contractors, it's because they may have a full-time job someplace else. This is maybe some side gig. But if we're talking about someone's full-time employment, I do think health care should be a right for everyone. And that's really why I'm glad we have a program here in San Francisco, because we got to take care of people on the front end, because if not, we're going to have to take care of it on the back end. And keeping people healthy and making sure people have access to affordable health care is just something that's extremely important.
Today on our special Your Call, we're joined by San Francisco Board of Supervisors President and mayoral candidate London Breed. And let's go to a few callers. Let's hear from Mia in San Francisco. Hi, Mia. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having this program. So I am currently going through the nightmare of an OMI. It started as an OMI eviction, and now my landlord's shifted to an LSF eviction. And so Proposition F on the ballot, the tenant's right to counsel, that any tenant threatened with eviction would be provided with an attorney, is very much near and dear to my heart. And it's interesting, though, I just had an exchange this morning with a woman named Elizabeth, who texted me on my phone and said she was a London Breed volunteer and reaching out about the election. I know that all the campaigns are doing this. But she said that London Breed, and this is a direct quote, helped introduce the bill on the ballot that funds eviction lawyers for renters. And actually, I know that Supervisor Breed and Supervisor Sheehy said that they would like to handle this whole issue with a measure at City Hall, with a Board of Supervisors measure, and that initially she opposed Proposition F and said, you know, we don't need it on the ballot, it's a waste of time. And I was just wondering if Supervisor Breed could please just comment about this.
Yes, and sadly, politics is a dirty game at times, and people put out a lot of misinformation. You know, I'm a renter. I'm one of the major candidates in this race, and I'm the only one who is a renter. And I actually, up until recently, had a roommate. And I basically specifically said that Proposition F is not necessary because we can do it by ordinance at the Board of Supervisors. And in fact, I introduced, along with Supervisor Sheehy, the ordinance at the Board of Supervisors. And I just basically felt strongly that why are we doing this at the ballot box when we can do it by ordinance at the Board of Supervisors? And in fact, I have not only made a commitment to make sure that it's funded as mayor, I'm the only one who's talking about funding it throughout this campaign. In fact, I called the mayor out on the proposed budget that he's pushing forward for the purposes of prioritizing what he thinks is important, and he would not commit to funding right to counsel if it passes on the ballot or if we pass it at the Board of Supervisors. No other candidate is asking about the funding. Proposition F doesn't have funding tied to it. So I just think this is the wrong issue for us to be fighting over and making it about politics. You know, the fact is, a lot of times I have residents who are facing eviction. They come to my office in tears, and it's too late. And they didn't have an attorney. They didn't have support. So this is something that I support and I believe in. And as mayor, I will make sure that it's funded.
Thank you for calling in. What would you say to supporters of the San Francisco Tenants Union? Because they've put out information about your record saying that you did not support Proposition G in 2014, an anti-speculator tax.
Which is not true. I did not take a position on Proposition G. What's the next lie?
Well, let's go over just a few, because this is out there, and it'd be nice to get this on the record. Voted against regulating tenant buyouts, which have displaced thousands of San Franciscans.
That is absolutely not true. And in fact, that legislation I voted for specifically, and it's on the record on the Board of Supervisors website. And the other thing about that legislation is it was thrown out in court, so it's not even an option on the books. So please check the record.
Well, this is why these interviews are important. Sponsored legislation to cut in half the established portion of affordable housing designated for low-income residents to give it to higher earners.
So that is not true. In fact, the Board of Supervisors work collaboratively to change the inclusionary housing laws based on a Nexus study. It was an 11-0 vote on the Board of Supervisors. Everyone voted to change what we did to add middle-income residents to inclusionary housing, and we did not decrease the number of low-income residents in the percentage equation. So that is not true.
All right, I have one more for you. Supported lowering the amount of affordable housing developers required to build in new developments from the 25% San Franciscans voted for down to 18%, a $60 million giveaway to developers.
Again, that was the inclusionary housing legislation that passed the Board of Supervisors with an 11-0 vote, where we all worked together to agree. We all agreed to make the changes based on the Nexus study. So other people like Jane Kim, other people like Aaron Peskin, everyone on the Board of Supervisors voted for a compromise piece of legislation based on the facts, based on a Nexus study, so that we can get the housing built.
All right. Well, thank you for that phone call. Let's go next to Chris in San Francisco. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah, good to talk with you, Supervisor Breed. Actually, some of those were questions I was going to ask you. I mean, one of the concerns that many renters have in the city, I respect that you're a renter, but that doesn't automatically mean that your policies, respectfully, will be the best for renters automatically. But the concern with the inclusionary housing measure, for instance, is, you know, I understand that eventually there was a unanimous vote, but you're the one who initiated the process of reducing the inclusionary affordable rate from 25% approved by the voters down to 18%. And eventually, as
that's not true.
I read about this, there was a compromise to get it down to 18% and then have steps going back up toward 25% over time. But you're the one who sponsored that legislation when it never had a chance, the voter-approved measure never had a chance to even get off the ground, to give it a try. So, you know, the question is, you know, why have you opposed some of these tenant protection measures? You know, why have you, at a time when the affordability crisis is so dramatic, and I know that you know about this and you care about it, but
thank you, Chris.
I don't see it in your record.
Yeah, and the thing is, because, you know, there are a group of people who are putting out misinformation about my record and what I care about. And I don't do this job to appear to a specific group of people. I believe in balance. I believe in fairness. I am a renter, and I am someone who actually grew up over 20 years of my life in affordable housing. When I proposed changes along with my colleagues, including a candidate for mayor, Supervisor Jane Kim, Aaron Peskin, Asha Safai, it had everything to do with what all members of the board said that they would do. That is propose legislation, propose the percentage that is most appropriate based on a independent nexus study that was done by the Comptroller's Office, which was the recommendation that we as members of the Board of Supervisors all agreed to support. We sat at the table. We work with labor. We work with a number of different groups that support tenants and housing rights and so on and so forth, and came up with a solution to this particular problem, which is what the legislation passed by 11-0 vote at the Board of Supervisors. And the sad part is that this kind of thing is being manipulated in a way that I don't think is effective in helping us to address these particular issues. No one's talking about my neighborhood preference legislation, where everyone in the Western Addition was gentrified, moved out. Most of the people I grew up with, born and raised, people, policymakers, including some in this race, they knew neighborhood preference legislation existed in places like New York, but refused to step up and push for a policy like that. That could have helped provide opportunities for so many Western Addition residents that I grew up, but they didn't have the political will to do it. I stand behind my record. It's fair. It's balanced. It's about trying to address a lot of these issues. It's about trying to come up with creative solutions to deal with these problems, not focus on manipulating and trying to change how I pushed or supported or didn't support a particular policy for my own political gain.
Thank you for calling, Chris. Today we're joined by San Francisco Board of Supervisors President and mayoral candidate London Breed. Let's talk about this for a minute. Ensuring that people can stay in their homes, since two-thirds of San Franciscans are renters. According to the San Francisco Rent Board, over the last 4 years, 8,354 people have been evicted. Amazing. I mean, as you know, so many activists, so many people of color gone. Vallejo, LA, all over the state. What are you going to do to ensure that even more people do not get evicted?
So part of what we have to do is we have to build more housing, and we have to build more housing for all income levels. We can't just, you know, build one layer of affordable housing. That is what the problem has been in San Francisco. You know, again, most people can't qualify for affordable housing, but they can afford market rate housing. So one solution is to build more housing and to make sure that there's economic diversity. That's number one. Number two, the outreach that we need to do in order to make sure people are applying for the affordable housing is extremely important, especially in communities where there are challenges. And especially because we do have a law like neighborhood preference that would give people a real shot, not a guarantee, but a real shot at accessing the affordable housing in their community. The other side of what we have to do in San Francisco is to try to keep people in their housing. And part of that is definitely right to civil counsel and making sure people have legal representation so that if they're facing an eviction, they're not facing it alone. And the other thing that we do that people don't talk about, but we run out of money for, you know, quite quickly, and this is where the private sector can help contribute, where someone is basically maybe lost their job, they're short on funds, they just need something to get them over the hump, you know, 2-3 months rent in order to get by so that they don't get evicted. You know, providing these additional dollars, which the city does, is going to be important in trying to keep people in their housing. So I think those are some of the steps that we need to take, and the private sector can be quite helpful in increasing the dollars that we have for those purposes.
Do you support the Costa-Hawkins repeal that'll be on the November ballot?
Yes, I think it's important, mostly because, again, I'm dealing with like large landlords who, in some instances, they're increasing people's rents anywhere between $500 and $1,200. That's, in essence, for most people, an eviction notice. And that is what the problem is. But I do understand that there also are good small property owners, and I don't want them to be punished in any way. I think that there's a balance. I had a great landlady. Our building sold about 2 years ago, but my landlady, she worked as a janitor for the school district, and she bought her building with her husband in 1956, worked really hard and took care of her place. And I want to make sure that people, especially those who own one building, that they have some layers of protection as well.
If Costa-Hawkins is repealed in November, how would that play out in San Francisco?
So San Francisco would be able to, on the local level at the Board of Supervisors, make policy decisions to increase the number of rent-controlled buildings in our housing stock. And so I think that that is a good thing, especially, again, for some of those properties where we do run into a lot of challenges.
Today, we're joined by San Francisco Board of Supervisors President and mayoral candidate London Breed. Let's go next to Anne in San Francisco. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. So it's no secret that we have a serious drug problem in this city. Every day that I'm walking, I see needles on the streets. So what's happening? And, like, how are we going to improve this?
Thank you for your question. You know, drug addiction isn't going to go away because we don't want to see it. It's a sad reality of our world. And, you know, I grew up in a community where, you know, drug abuse and use was just one of those normal things. And it's unfortunate that we've arrived at a place where needles are all over our streets, people shooting up openly, people struggling with addiction. And, you know, what I've been proposing, which is something that's bold, is safe injection sites, because it's not about just making it convenient for people to shoot up. It's really about bringing people indoors and treatment on demand. And the ability to get these needles off the streets, to get people from shooting up on the streets openly, to make sure that there's some sort of treatment on demand, there's medical professionals. I mean, you know, I sadly lost a sister to a drug overdose. And I think, you know, what could we do different? What could we do different in a city like San Francisco so that doesn't happen? In Vancouver, Canada, for example, they've had over 3,400 people referred to detox who did not come back through the system. That's most likely 3,400 people who are clean and sober, who are living their lives. So it can't just be, we don't want to see it, it's a problem. We definitely need to bring it indoors and we need to treat it, but we also need to make sure that we provide easier access for treatment on demand. And that's really why I've been the leader in proposing this idea. And most of the time, no one else wants to talk about it because it's so controversial.
Thank you, Anne. Let's go to Jack in San Francisco. Hi, Jack.
Hello, Supervisor Breed. I just have a question about the talks of the past couple of years about building a new jail in the city. And it really worries me, you know, that the city could possibly be investing in more incarceration. So how are you helping people of color like myself feel safer?
So I actually led the effort here in the city to stop the building of the jail and to reject the $80 million grant that the state wanted to provide us with to do so. You know, I have a brother who sadly is incarcerated, and I think about so many of my friends and family members who have gone through the criminal justice system and people who are even incarcerated for things that they haven't even done. That's frustrating. I actually pushed the plan to stop the jail, but more importantly, I think we have to figure out better ways for rehabilitation to address issues of mass incarceration. And more recently, my legislation to get rid of the fines and fees that people deal with when they have served their time in jail and their home, and they're trying to do better and trying to get a job. Number one, they're burdened with fines and fees for fingerprinting, sometimes for their ankle monitoring, other things. I led the efforts to pass that legislation, which passed unanimously at the Board of Supervisors. You know, we banned the box here in San Francisco. I'm really proud of that. And so many of my friends who came home, you know, one of the first things that I was able to do is help them get a job at Muni when we opened up the floodgates for opportunity. We've hired over 700 drivers, and a lot of those folks born and raised in San Francisco who are getting a second chance. So I think part of it's not just a one thing. It's really, you know, making the kind of change necessary in order to, yes, you know, we got to hold people accountable for things that they do. But the challenge we've had, I think, in San Francisco is there are too many people who are behind bars who never even did it in the first place.
Right.
And so that's a real problem.
And we know that people take desperate measures when they are desperate. So you've talked a lot about the car break-ins, and there have been arrests over the last few months. And I noticed that they're mostly young people of color from all over, not just San Francisco. There is an international crime ring, but there are people in the Bay Area who are doing this. And, you know, I often think, what happens when those kids, young people, go to jail? What happens when they get out? And is that the solution, to just put them in jail and then they're on this, you know, jail pipe in this pipeline, and how do they get out of it?
And so here's the thing for me. I work with a lot of these kids. I paid a lot of my young people because I didn't want them out there breaking in the cars and doing things that would land them in juvenile hall. And there were things that occurred in our community. And what we tried to do is work with the police department to provide an alternative to putting them in juvenile or what have you when they messed up. They had to work it off, or there had to be consequences. Somehow they had to pay for it. And we worked together to provide that opportunity. But more importantly, young people, and this is why I'm proposing this in my education platform, they have got to be exposed to more opportunities at an early age. My normal growing up, teenage pregnancy, drugs, violence, hopelessness, frustration, poverty, that was my normal for over 20 years of my life. And so just imagine coming out of that and thinking, wow, there's so many more opportunities. And just imagine the opportunity to be exposed at that when you're in high school or even junior high. The companies in this city, the city and county of San Francisco, we have to take responsibility for our young people at an early age so that they are provided an opportunity, but also they need to be paid, because they come from, in some instances, low-income families. And we can't just think we're going to be able to put them in a program and they're thinking about, well, I didn't eat today, or, you know, some other thing that they're dealing with. We have to make sure that it's a well-balanced program meeting their needs at an early age so that they don't even become, you know, caught up in that stuff in the first place.
Yeah, we had three young women on from the Bayview, which is 5 minutes from where we are right now, talking about how they do not have resources. They deal with gun violence on a regular basis. And it's shameful in a city with so much wealth that these young women, 5 minutes from this station, have to deal with this.
And part of this is, you know,
and why is that?
And part of it is, you know, the city is providing funding to a lot of programs. Some of them are effectively working. I know I worked at the African American Art and Culture Complex for 10 years as an executive director. I paid my kids. I had them actively engaged in programs. Our programs were successful, but we have to make sure that all programs that provide support and opportunities to kids are successful. And the number one priority is opportunity. Opportunity to explore what is available here in San Francisco.
Why are these neighborhoods neglected, though? Bayview, Sunnydale, some parts of Potrero, still some parts of Western Addition and Fillmore.
I don't agree that some parts of Western Addition and Fillmore are neglected.
All right, then let's talk about the Bayview, and that's fine. Let's talk about the Bayview and Sunnydale. I mean, it's, why is that?
Yeah. And I can't answer that question. I think that part of what we have to do better is make sure that we're funding the right programs, that we are connecting young people to opportunity at an early age. And that's really what I'm proposing in my education platform. You know, I can't answer for why they're neglected, but I can answer for my proposals of what I want to do to make sure that it doesn't continue to happen.
We have a question from Rose, who says, what is your position on Prop C? Because both D and C, which would fund child care and preschool education, cannot win.
Well, I think that the challenge with C is, you know, C is it's specifically for child care, but then most of the money goes into the general fund, and it's not necessarily earmarked for housing specifically. And so I am concerned about C, but, you know, either way, if one of them passes, if both of them passes, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's fine with me, because as mayor, that's more money I have in order to do the work I need to do for the city.
And D was put on the ballot because of signatures from five supervisors, right?
Yes.
Including yourself.
No, I wasn't I was acting mayor at the time.
You're okay, right. But you support that one.
Yes, and I help put it together.
Okay.
I help author it.
We are getting a lot of questions about the attack ads that we are all inundated with against Mark Leno and Jane Kim.
What about the attack ads against London Breed? There are attack ads coming from Mark Leno and other people, including a more recent one from the tenants union or affordable housing something.
All right. So attack ads.
Attack
ads. Where do you stand on those?
I oppose attack ads, whether they're against my opponents, whether they're against me or anyone else. That's quite interesting.
Now, you have been asked a lot of questions about the super PACs, and you know people are so tired of money in politics, from the local level to the national level. That's why 100 million people didn't vote in the last election. And when we have mayoral races, any races in San Francisco, it's really sad to see 30% of the population coming out to vote. I hope it's higher this time.
Me too, for sure.
But people are so angry about money flooding our system. And I know that you've been asked about this, and you've been totally offended when people have said, how are you going to be beholden to these people? That's not at all how I'm going to ask this question. People do want to know, though, if money is being spent on attack ads for you, Gail Conway, Ron Conway's wife, $200,000, Evan Williams, former Twitter chair, $100,000, what do they want in return?
You have to ask them that. But let me just be clear. It is offensive, regardless of how you ask it. I have worked my butt off in my role as a member of the Board of Supervisors, before I was on the Board of Supervisors, as a community activist, as someone who ran a nonprofit organization. I've gotten awards from many of these folks who are running for mayor. Not once, until I got into the world of politics, have I ever been accused of anything and attacked in such, I think, in a horrible way.
Well, I hope you don't think I'm accusing or attacking
all. I don't want to imply that. I'm implying what, you know, all of this is
right,
has been
about. And I've heard it. And that's why I wanted to direct this question in a way to say, people are so tired of this. The Koch brothers, the NRA, I'm not comparing that at all to what you're dealing with. But people just want to know, if these people are spending money on attack ads, why? What do they want in return?
And you have to ask them what they want. All I can do is control what I do. As a person, as someone who's worked my entire life to support my community, as someone who has made ethical decisions and have made decisions that some of those people agree with and some of them don't. That is just the world of politics. That's just what happens. And to reduce my life's work and everything that I've done to imply in some way that because people spend money on my campaign or some money to tear someone down or support this person, to imply somehow that means that I'm going to make a decision other than the decision I believe is the right thing to do is offensive. And that's just what it is, especially because of my career, especially because of my work, especially because of where I came from and the people that I've been able to help, not just in this role as a member of the Board of Supervisors, but before that.
Right. And what would you say to people who are so sick and tired of money in politics, especially dark money, where sometimes we don't even know where this money's coming from?
I'm sick and tired of it. I can win this race on my own merit. I don't need anyone on the sidelines spending money on my behalf. I've been raising my money from San Franciscans. I've been raising my money from people who were my teachers in high school, friends that I grew up with, people from all over the city, my family members and other folks. People are out there holding signs and busting their butts and working hard for this campaign. I can do this campaign without all the side PAC monies, whatever you want to call them. But you and I both know, along with all the candidates in this race, we don't have control over what these people do. And the firefighters, in fact, they have a PAC for me. I'm not going to tell the firefighters, you know, not to support my campaign. There are a lot of other good people that are out there staying positive, staying focused on the issues. And in fact, many of the other candidates signed a pledge that they're not even basically talking about. This group put out a hit piece against me, and both of those campaigns helped to fund it. So to imply somehow that, you know, like money in politics, sadly, is just a part of reality. And I don't like the idea of being reduced to just the people that have contributed or done something in this particular campaign. I'm prepared to be mayor to represent all San Franciscans, to focus on the challenges that exist. And we as candidates should just focus on the issues, focus on what we're going to do, focus on what we've done and what we plan to bring to the table.
And I know that citizens would love to do that, too. And they're saying, I'm getting all these darn ads, and they're offended by them.
I'm offended by them, too, because I can win this on my own merit.
So next time we have you on, so we don't have to talk about all this big money, what would you do as mayor to ensure that we don't have big money in politics in San Francisco.
That's been something that people have been talking about, not just doing in San Francisco, but doing in the state of California, doing in the nation. There is some things that we have tried to do on the Board of Supervisors, but locally we can only control that. Then there are also state laws that need to be addressed. I mean, this is a very complicated issue. And again, there have been other members who are running for the board, who are running for mayor as well, and they've not made any steps towards this direction. I've at least tried on the Board of Supervisors, mm-hmm. and I will continue to do so as mayor.
We will ask them about that. But will you take steps on this if you become mayor, money and politics?
Oh, that would be an easy one. I actually have legislation that I'm passing through the board now.
San Francisco Board of Supervisors President and mayoral candidate London Breed. You can go to yourcallradio.org to read more about her platform. Early voting has begun. You can do it at City Hall. And also, we have ranked choice voting. Vote for at least two candidates. If your top choice doesn't get 50%, your second choice might win. President Breed, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. This is a special edition of Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar.